This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Happy Saturday to you. I hope you had a fabulous Thanksgiving week. I am Jeff Mellor, hanging out with you for the next hour. We have some pretty big news for the White Sox. They made a free agent signing this week. Anthony Kay, 30-year-old left-hander, who was at one time a first-round pick by the New York Mets, didn't have a whole lot of success in his first stint in the majors, but he went overseas and ended up finding some real nice changes in his repertoire and was quite a bit of success. And this is something that the White Sox have had success themselves doing. You'll recall Eric Fetty back in 2024, who the White Sox signed, and Eric Fetty went on to put together a really nice 21 starts in 2024 when he went 7-4 with a 3.11 ERA before he was eventually moved on at the trade deadline to the St. Louis Cardinals in a three-team trade that netted the White Sox, Miguel Vargas, and a couple of minor leaguers. So is this what the White Sox are doing? I don't feel like it's exactly the same thing, and allow me to explain. Anthony Kay, who's 30 years old, I think he has a little bit more upside than Eric Fetty had, at least in terms of the type of player when they were signing him. I think the White Sox probably knew that the likelihood was they would trade Eric Fetty if he could give them what they hoped he would. And ultimately, I think he provided more than probably the best dreamt outcomes could have been for Eric Fetty. Now, Anthony Kay is 30 years old, and even though when he was drafted, it was with the idea that he was somebody who had an elite changeup, Anthony Kay is not some soft-tossing lefty who the White Sox have just acquired. He still hits 94 miles per hour on the gun, and I think the White Sox are going to slot him into the starting rotation. He'll probably be looked at as maybe initially the number three starter because I think Shane Smith and Davis Martin are unquestionably going into this season as the one and two if you look at how you would project them on opening day. Anthony Kay, I think, slots in as your likely number three starter when the season begins, partially because of what he was able to accomplish throwing 155 innings. And that length that he was able to provide in Japan is something that should not be underestimated when you're talking about building a Major League Baseball rotation. The White Sox are loaded with a lot of high-impact arms who maybe have yet to make their truest impacts in the major leagues, but you also need a veteran presence who I think you can count on and to pencil in for somebody who you think will give you 28 to 32 starts. And I think that's what the White Sox are hoping they're getting in Anthony Kay, who they signed to a two-year, $12 million deal this past week. Now, Anthony Kay, as I mentioned earlier, was at one point a first-round pick. He was the 31st overall pick in the 2016 draft before he was eventually traded to Toronto, along with Simeon Woods Richardson, remember, for Marcus Stroman. So that's when the Mets dealt Kay to the Blue Jays, and they received Marcus Stroman in return. Now, Kay, again, did not have a whole lot of success. He did reach the majors, but in his limited experience in the majors over 5 years, Anthony Kay produced a 5.59 ERA in just 44 games. He made 7 starts in his major league career, logged 85 and a third innings. He did strike out 88, and I you know, maybe that doesn't blow you away, but anytime a pitcher can have at least a one strikeout per inning pitch ratio, that's something that grabs my attention, especially considering how many struggles Kay had initially with command. He was somebody who was prone to walking hitters in his first run, walked 47 over those 85 and a third innings, ended up with a 1.60 whip in his five-year tenure throughout the majors. Again, that's you know by now, that's no bueno. That's not going to get it done. But Anthony Kay, after he struggled with the Cubs and Mets in 23 and in 2023, he went over to Japan, where he really did have an opportunity to unlock some things. And as I was reading up on some of the most recent scouting reports about Anthony Kay, here is what I uncovered and what you probably need to know as a White Sox fan. Now, he's 30 years old. He's a lefty. He'll be 31 on opening day in 2026. What he was able to do, he's got the traditional three-quarters delivery. He's got that compact arm action. In Japan, he emphasized more consistent timing and rhythm in his delivery. He's talked about feeling like a, quote, completely different pitcher, unquote, because of all the adjustments he made overseas, and clearly he was that. Now, he's got a three-pitch mix where he goes four-seam, curve, change, for the most part, occasionally mixing in slider/cutter usage. His four-seam fastball ranges between 91, and he's maxed out at 96, but again, he usually sits around 94. He's got that curveball, 76 to 80, with the that's his primary breaking pitch, and he's gone a lot more to the four-seam curveball action. But he was drafted with that changeup being thought of as an elite outpitch. So we'll see. It's flashed at times, but I don't think he's ever really truly trusted it in the majors. We'll see if he feels differently about it now here at the majors, not once he actually is pitching back here stateside. So I suspect will be a starter, and as long as he gives the White Sox competent innings, I think he'll be that. But he's also somebody who could, if it doesn't go great for him as a starter, he could slot into that swingman role for the White Sox, especially as a lefty. That gives him a bit of versatility. So for 2 years and $12 million, I think it's a nice piece of business for the White Sox. Looks like he's somebody who they think has some upside. And again, they've had the success with Eric Fetty in the past. And so I think this is exactly what you're looking for with Anthony Kay. And I think at this point, I don't know how you White Sox fans feel, but I, as a White Sox fan, having watched Brian Bannister head the White Sox pitching development now for the last couple of seasons, it's something that I think you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And the fact that they've identified Anthony Kay, and I think one of the nice things that probably appealed to Anthony Kay was the fact that the White Sox offered him a real spot to compete for a rotation spot. Again, I mentioned Shane Smith, Davis Martin. I think they're locked in as your 1-2. And then I look at their roster right now and I say, I think Anthony Kay is probably your number 3. And of course, this always, I'll add the caveat that should go without saying, but you always have to mention it. Injuries, barring injuries, right? So I think it goes Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Anthony Kay, and then Sean Burke. He ended the season in the White Sox rotation. I think he probably gets a crack at a rotation spot. Probably slated to be in there, but again, if he doesn't have success in spring training, he could certainly find himself on the outside looking in. And then I'll add in Jonathan Cannon and Tanner McDougal, who was added to the 40-man roster. So Tanner McDougal, after all the success he had at AA last year, I think he certainly could be somebody who, if he has a nice spring, could carve out a spot for him in the rotation. I just gave you 6 names for 5 spots there. We know in this modern baseball that the 6-man rotation, it's almost something that you kind of have to assume is going to be in play. And we saw Will Venable and his staff utilized that when the opportunities arose, along with some utilization of the openers. I think I stated all six of those names. So again, five rotation spots. I'll add in Hagan Smith and Noah Schultz. I do believe at some point this year will make their major league debuts. So you've got six guys for five spots with two high-end prospects who, if they have any success in the early going, could very well make an appearance at Wright Field on the south side this year fairly quickly. So that's something to keep in mind with Anthony Kay. But again, I think he gives the White Sox some nice stability that they were going to need in the rotation. And he kind of slots in my opinion, in that Martin Perez veteran spot. So the White Sox added Anthony Kay this weekend through free agency. He pitched last year in Japan, and this season he will be pitching for your Chicago White Sox on the south side. Again, 2 years, $12 million deal. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. When we come back, Jack Ankeny of Sports Illustrated, he covers the White Sox. He just wrapped up his first season, and he's also an alum of a powerhouse football program. We'll touch on that as well. This is White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game ticket presales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. As we look ahead to what will be, no doubt, a very interesting week in the winter months, it's the Major League Baseball winter meetings coming your way this week. We'll preview that here in a moment and kind of talk about what went on this past season as Jack Ankeny of Sports Illustrated just finished his first season on the beat with the White Sox. And he joins me now here on White Sox Weekly. Jeff Meller, back with you each and every Saturday, getting you caught up on your favorite baseball team during the winter months. Jack, happy holidays. I hope you had a fabulous Thanksgiving as we look ahead as well to Christmas. How has your offseason been, my friend?
It's been good, Jeff. Well, thanks for having me on first. It's been nice to be a little bit less busy with without the day-to-day baseball, but I feel like we'll get to the point here pretty soon where we're itching for warm weather and baseball again. So it's been good.
No, that's well said, especially here in Chicago when the first real snowfall just hit us and we're looking ahead at a long, probably cold, snowy winter. Boy, baseball, just thinking about it warms our hearts. But yeah, no, so Jack, I'm curious, you just wrapped up your first season covering the White Sox for Sports Illustrated. First and foremost, what are your thoughts about covering the White Sox for your first season? Any surprises that came up on you this year that you maybe weren't expecting, as the White Sox were coming off, of course, a historically poor season?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in terms of surprises, I sort of felt like throughout the season, you know, there were some days when you'd drive to the ballpark and, you know, I'd try to rack my brain, all right, what are we going to do today? And there was always something that seemed to pop up that was unexpected. So I think just from a job perspective, that was interesting. But, no, I think it was cool to see just the amount of top prospects the White Sox had come up through the organization this year. It was not necessarily a year of contending or pushing for the playoffs, but to see guys like Colson Montgomery, Kyle Teal, Edgar Carroll, a bunch of other guys make their MLB debuts. I think there was that made for interesting storylines throughout the season and sort of just the overarching theme of, like, you know, how do you bounce back from a 121 loss season? So I enjoyed it. I've always loved baseball, so it was a great year.
You mentioned all of the young call-ups. Of course, Colson Montgomery continues to be, when you look back on the season that he had, what it started out as, and then how it finished. I mean, absolutely storybook. Of course, some Sox fans, I think, might have been a little bit disappointed that he didn't finish higher in the American League Rookie of the Year voting. But I think when you take a step back and you look at the fact that Nick Kurtz had such a ridiculous season, it would have taken an absurd season by Colson Montgomery to beat him anyway. but also factor in just how far Colson came, where he actually had to be shut down in his initial AAA season, had to go back and work with Ryan Fuller individually back at the Arizona complex, and then returned, and then by the 4th of July was making his Major League debut, and then having an absurd second half of the season in which he hit 21 home runs. And that's the first time anybody had ever done that, hitting 21 home runs in the second half after not hitting a single homer in the first half of the season. So it was quite a historic year. I mean, I just hit some of the bullet points. What are your thoughts on the season that Colson Montgomery had?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for two reasons. One, it shows that the organization was willing to kind of take an unorthodox approach and succeed with it, with what you talked about with sending him to Arizona. And then individually, I mean, those 21 home runs in 71 games, I think his first one came 10 or 12 games into his Major League debut. So it was really a shorter stint when he hit all those home runs. So I think that shows you that he has an elite trait in terms of his power. And if he can make some other tweaks to maybe, you know, get his batting average or on base percentage up just a little bit, I think you have a real star in what he was able to do this past season. And you're right, you know, he was never going to catch Nick Kurtz with what the season that he put together. But to finish fifth in Rookie of the Year voting, despite playing just 71 games, you know, that says it all right there.
I'll add, too, I think White Sox fans continue to be encouraged when they look back at last year. It wasn't just Colson Montgomery who had a breakthrough year, but we look at Edgar Caro, we look at Kyle Teal, we see what Chase Meidroth did. Maybe it fell off a little bit for Chase Meidroth, but I think when you look at what he was able to accomplish all in all, you can look at him and see a very useful player going forward. And then, of course, I mentioned all of those names who really made, I think, a tremendous impact. And when you go back to the start of spring training, most people would have said, okay, tell me who's going to be the breakthrough prospect for the White Sox. Most people would have told you it was going to be Hagen Smith or Noah Schultz, and for it not to be either of those guys, and those guys still looking like they have a lot to build on this season, there's a lot to like for the White Sox in terms of young players that made their debut last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference when you think of the end of the 2024 season versus the end of the 25 season is at 24, you were sort of questioning, all right, can any of these guys be part of the future? Maybe a few of them. I think at the end of this season, you could identify several of those guys that you named. I'd even add, you know, Shane Smith and Mike Vassell, who had great seasons after being Rule 5 draft picks. You were able to identify a group of, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 guys that can be part of the future and be quality players. And, you know, for all the talk that Colson Montgomery got this season, I mean, I think Kyle Teal has a chance to, you know, have the best career out of all those guys. I was really impressed with him this season. You know, kind of increased his power as the year went on. You know, good defensively, hit for a pretty high average. So I think that was a win in the sense that you could kind of see the core starting to form for the White Sox.
No, I think that's a great point. As Jack Ankeny, who covers the White Sox for Sports Illustrated, joins me here on White Sox Weekly. Yeah, I think Kyle Teal showed, especially at the end of the season, some superstar traits.
Yeah.
And then when you factor in he's a catcher, and just to have the type of hit tool that he has behind the plate, there's a lot of value in that. I believe he finished with a 1.9 wins above replacement last year, and that was in less than a half a season of work. So he played 78 games. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about Kyle Teal. I completely agree with you. He certainly could be the foundational building block that the White Sox fans maybe didn't know they had. Well, they certainly didn't know they had if you go back just a year ago prior to the winter meetings, because he was, of course, acquired in the trade for Garrett Crochet. Working off of that, though, you mentioned Shane Smith and Mike Vassell, and the Rule 5 draft is actually upcoming this week. It'll be Wednesday, December 10th, and you hit on Shane Smith and Mike Vassell. Now, the White Sox only drafted Shane Smith, but they did trade for Mike Vassell at the beginning of the season, and he was under the same Rule 5 implications that Shane Smith was under for the White Sox, which means, for those who may not know, he had to remain on the White Sox roster the entire season, Otherwise, the Mets would have the opportunity to reclaim him. And because of that, of course, the White Sox roster was wide open, but there were some opportunities. But it wasn't just a gift handed to Mike Vassell because the White Sox were like, hey, we need you. Both Vassell and Shane Smith more than earned their spot on the roster all year long.
For sure. And, you know, you look at, you mentioned the wins above replacement with Teal. I mean, if you just look at White Sox pitchers, it was Adrian Hauser first and Mike Vassell second. If you look at, baseball references, wins above replacement. So I don't think anyone had, Vassell doing that going into the year. And it was really impressive too, because, you know, they asked him to start some games. They asked him to be a long reliever. He even closed some games. So I thought that was impressive to see a rookie kind of come in and be able to adapt on the fly to all those different situations and really handle it well. Another good sign for the White Sox in terms of, their drafting with Shane Smith, and then also, player acquisition with Vassell, getting him from the Mets.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'll just add, and you can absolutely, I think, probably echo my sentiments here, Jack, but Mike Vassell, he ended up pitching 101 innings for the White Sox, which was fifth on the roster. Considering he wasn't a starter, that was quite the achievement. To a 2.50 ERA, by the way, you talked about his versatility and how valuable that can be to any team, not just a team like the White Sox, but any team in baseball, I think, would gladly love to have a guy like Mike Vassell who, whenever they gave him the ball, whether it was in an opener situation or when they maybe asked him to push himself and go five innings on the occasional spot start, or having that epic closeout moment against the Yankees where at the fist pump, I believe, to close out that series and pick up his first career save. I think that was his first career save that day. But nevertheless, in addition to all that, this is where I think you and I can be so valuable to the listeners out there, Jack, because we got a chance to observe and talk to Mike Vassell inside the clubhouse. And there's no doubt, for all he brings on the field, inside the clubhouse, even though he was a rookie last year, Mike Vassell was like a 10-year veteran. And he's somebody who I can see being a key piece on the White Sox and inside the clubhouse as a leader as he grows more and has a little bit more success under his belt in this league. He's going to be a team leader, there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And, great personality, I think, for us. He was always someone that we could go to and get a really good quote, someone who would, add some interesting insights. I think he was very well-liked around the team. He kind of took on that the Batman moniker. He had the mask in his locker, and that was kind of a nickname, people gave him and stuff. He's a really great guy. And I think that was kind of reflective of a lot of the young guys coming up. A lot of high character guys that seem to kind of take on this challenge of, all right, it's on us to, try to turn this around and, bring some winning ways to the White Sox.
Another bullpen arm I want to touch on, Jack. We'll take a quick timeout before we do that, though. And when we come back, probably the arm with the most talent inside the White Sox bullpen, I want to ask Jack Ankeny about that, along with some other White Sox-related issues. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Happy Saturday to you. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000, your home of the Chicago White Sox. Here with you even during the offseason on Saturdays, getting you all caught up with your favorite baseball team. Jack Ankeny of Sports Illustrated joining us here on White Sox Weekly this week. We've covered a lot of topics. I do want to ask him about a high-impact reliever who may one day be a starter here in a moment. But before we do that, happy holidays, White Sox fans. Celebrate this offseason with the perfect gift for family and friends, a White Sox Holiday Flex Pack starting at just $66 and redeemable for more than 50 games throughout the 2026 season. To learn more and purchase, visit whitesox.com/holidaypacks. Grant Taylor came up, and when he did, maybe it was my own belief, but I thought he'd probably at some point lock in and become the White Sox no doubt closer before the season wrapped. And maybe this speaks a little bit to Will Venable's open-mindedness in that he tabbed Grant Taylor, who I think unquestionably has the best stuff in the White Sox bullpen, but he recognized that it was still a learning opportunity for Grant Taylor to be used in that fireman role, which, you know, where you go maybe a couple of innings, or you're not always used in the ninth inning. Maybe he's used in the seventh or eighth with the highest leverage on the line. And I think for the most part, even though if you look at the stats, especially if you look at the old numbers like 4.91 ERA, some people might say, boy, I don't know what all the fuss was about with this young flamethrower. But what I will say is that when you look at 54 strikeouts in just 36 and two-thirds innings pitched, the man misses bats. And I know he's been somebody who he hasn't given up on the idea of eventually being a starter in this league. And maybe that's certainly possible, especially when you look with what the White Sox were able to do with Garrett Crochet. However, I think for the upcoming season, and feel free to disagree if you want, Jack, but I think the White Sox are probably going to use Grant Taylor out of the bullpen when all is said and done. But that is my opinion. That's nothing that the White Sox have come out and said officially yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. I think if you could, you know, Chris Getz has talked about potentially using him as like a multi-inning reliever or something like that. And I think it sort of stems from the fact that he threw 63 innings in 2025 between the minors and majors. And that was, you know, much more than he had the previous seasons due to injuries and when he was in college. So I think they want to, you know, be mindful of his injury history. They don't want to push him too much. You know, if you could use him in a role where, you know, maybe he gets to 100 innings this year, and then you think next year, you know, then you reassess, can this guy be a starter, or do we see him more as an elite closer? I don't think there's a huge rush to make that decision for his long term, but if you can get those innings up again this season, I think that will give them a better idea of kind of what he could be going forward. Because when you watch him in these one-inning stints, I mean, it is really impressive. There's times when, you know, he's blown that fastball by, you know, veteran good hitters and got some nasty off-speed pitches too. And then Getz has also mentioned sometimes that the, you know, his stats like fielding independent pitching was like number one in Major League Baseball for guys that had thrown 30 or more innings. So that's kind of more of a predictive stat kind of the. And so I think they have a really high upside arm in Taylor going forward, and kind of maybe use next season to see, you know, where his role might fit best going into future years.
Jack Ankeny joining me here on White Sox Weekly for another few minutes. I'm Jeff Meller hanging out with you. White Sox did make some news this week as they signed Anthony Kay to a two-year, $12 million deal. Now, the White Sox, Anthony Kay pitched in the Japanese League last season, and the White Sox have had some success in previous seasons, tabbing some folks, most recently Eric Fetty, who had a 7-4 record with a 3.11 ERA and 21 starts back in 2024 before the Sox shipped him off to the Cardinals in a three-team trade that would ultimately net them Miguel Vargas and a couple of minor league players. So they've had some success doing this, and what are your thoughts about Anthony Kay, the left-handed pitcher, who looks like he's probably going to be tabbed for a rotation spot when the season begins?
Yeah, I would anticipate him being part of that rotation, and it is an interesting signing because he's a guy that, you know, former first-round pick, when he was a prospect, he was traded for Marcus Stroman or along with some other prospects. So a guy that at one point people had really high expectations for, had some injuries, never really worked out in MLB, but still only 30 years old and coming off a couple of really, really strong seasons in Japan, and the White Sox feel that maybe they can, you know, replicate that now in MLB. So I think it was worth a shot, you know, a two-year, $12 million deal basically with an option for a third year. So, you know, I think he was worth a shot as someone that doesn't cost you a lot, but you know, if he's able to replicate or even come close to what he did in Japan here, then it's going to look like a great signing. So I think the White Sox definitely needed to add another starting pitcher like Kay. They probably still need one more, depending on, you know, various factors. I think they have more depth in the pitching staff this year. But, you know, it's one that's interesting. They kind of do this with a lot of guys who are sort of the post-hype prospect type of thing when you think of, not totally the same, but with a guy like Miguel Vargas or Curtis Meade or Everson Pereira, who they also traded for this offseason. So that'll be an interesting one to track to see if, you know, Kay can kind of get to the potential that people, you know, thought he could once reach, you know, a few years ago.
No, that's a great point, Jack, because one of those things that I always love as an outside observer is when a team, bets on a player with that pedigree. And your point, Anthony Kay being a former first-round pick by the Mets, he does have that, you know, high pedigree that you look at and you say, you know what, if you can unlock some things, there may be some there might be some potential here that has been untapped. And certainly they were able to do it with success with Eric Fetty when they brought him over. So I think, too, the price was right. You have Anthony Kay, who, if things go according to plan, I think he'll step into the rotation. In all likelihood, he's going to be the man who is tabbed to replace Martin Perez, who, you know, who did great work, but at his age, just, and of course, the shoulder and elbow injuries that he dealt with, I just don't think the White Sox wanted to count on him for the long term this season. So that's why they made the pivot to someone like Anthony Kay, who is a little bit younger and I think, you know, maybe has a little bit more upside to come here. Jack Ankeny joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Jack, I mentioned the upcoming winter meetings this week. I'm curious, though, the hot stove has been percolating already. And obviously Dylan Cease, the biggest name to land, former White Sox pitcher, who picked up a $210 million deal for 7 seasons with the Toronto Blue Jays. You had Josh Naylor re-ink with the Mariners, who traded for him over the deadline this past season. He went for 5 years, $92.5 million. Devin Williams, former closer for the Brewers, tried it for the Yankees. He's going to stay in New York and pitch for the Mets now. We'll see what happens with Edwin Diaz. I'm curious, anything stand out for you in terms of initial free agent signings or what you're looking at right now as the winter meetings hit us this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think the initial price tag on the Cease deal was probably more than I expected, but then it came out a little bit later that I think $64 million of that is going to be deferred, so it sort of changes you know, the equation there with the luxury tax and things like that. I thought the Brandon Nimmo for Marcus Semien trade was interesting too, just from the standpoint that you don't see a ton of one-for-one trades with, you know, solid, you know, above average to very good MLB players. So I thought that was kind of an interesting swap there. You know, definitely a lot still to happen with some of the big free agents like Kyle Tucker, Kyle Schwarber, and several of the pitchers too. Nothing like too shocking yet, but, you know, I think it will be a really entertaining offseason, just with some of the big names that are out there.
Yeah, you know what, too, that's a great point. I didn't mention the Nimmo Semien trade, but what's interesting there is obviously you would imagine that the Mets are probably going to be in the market for a center fielder, which leads to a question that I think a lot of White Sox fans are wondering about, and maybe it's not the Mets, maybe it's a team like the Phillies, maybe, you know, or someone who I'm not thinking of right now, but Luis Robert Jr., the White Sox go to the winter meetings, and there will be no doubt discussions had about whether or not Luis Robert is somebody that Chris Getz is open to trading. Do you think, if you had to throw a percentage on it, do you think Luis Robert Jr., I guess, what are the odds you think that he will be in the White Sox starting center field on opening day in 2026?
Yeah, I would say I think the chance that he gets traded is maybe like 40%. I'd put it a little bit below 50, just because, you know, the White Sox have had opportunity. There's been points the last several years that he's been in trade talks and it hasn't worked out, you know, because they haven't gotten the return that they're looking for. I guess the only thing that's different now is that if you kind of look at the, you know, free agent outfielders after Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger, there's not a whole lot of talent there. So maybe that makes a team that needs an outfielder more willing to trade for a guy like Robert. I think the White Sox are open to dealing him. They've said that they're not actively shopping him, but they'll listen to offers. I think just from the perspective that you have $20 million tied up to him and 15 to Andrew Benintendi, that, you know, that's a big chunk of their payroll. I think they'd like to, you know, be able to spread that out a little bit more. I think the worry about holding on to him is that the last two seasons he's kind of started off the year particularly slow. So, and he also has the injury history. So, you know, are you willing to take the risk that he gets off to a slow start and then his value is even lower? Or do you think that he can, reach his potential at the start of the year and you get higher value? That's kind of the decision they have to make. I'd go 40% that he gets traded, but it definitely wouldn't surprise me. I just don't know at this point if a team is willing to give that much for him because of, his offensive, decrease the last few years and the injuries.
All right, Jack Ankeny, as I let you go here, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, an IU alum, a man from the football factory that is Indiana these days, as we sit here on Saturday getting set for Indiana-Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship. It's 1-2 tonight. How are you feeling about this game, and how are you feeling about your college being a football powerhouse these days?
It's crazy. I mean, I was there. They had two bowl seasons when I was a student in 19 and 20. But I covered I covered Indiana for 3 years after graduation and watched a lot of bad Indiana football. So it has really been incredible to see the last two seasons how Kurt Cignetti has turned this team around. I feel pretty good going into Saturday. I mean, I think Indiana is better than they were last year. And when you think about last year's matchup with Ohio State, they had a bunch of special teams mistakes that kind of threw that off. You know, this is a neutral site game as opposed to playing at Ohio State. So I think Indiana's got a shot. And I think it could be a little bit low scoring because you got two really solid defenses. But, it's been great to see that's got to be one of the best coaching jobs in college football history by Kurt Cignetti these last couple of years.
No doubt about it. And he has been handsomely rewarded for the work that he's done. Jack Ankeny of Sports Illustrated, as always, man, I appreciate your time. Have a fantastic holiday season and new year. And I will talk to you again soon, Jack. Thanks for joining me here on White Sox Weekly.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, Jeff. Have a good one.
Our pleasure. Again, Jack Ankeny of Sports Illustrated does great work covering the White Sox. This was his first season on the beat this year, so check him out on the socials, Ankeny_Jack. Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll take a look at what will be an interesting week at the Major League Baseball winter meetings. We'll do that right here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Jeff Meller here, wrapping up White Sox Weekly, this week's edition for you. Here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000, we had the White Sox announcing the initial players that are scheduled to attend Sox Fest Live at the Romova Theater this upcoming January, on January 30th and 31st. White Sox players Davis Martin, Chase Meidroff, Colson Montgomery, Luis Robert Jr., Shane Smith, Grant Taylor, Kyle Teal, and Miguel Vargas all headline the list of 2026 VIPs scheduled to join fans at the Romova Theater, again, on January 30th and 31st for Sox Fest Live, presented by Rate Blue Moon and Wintrust Financial Corporation. Also, infielder Sam Antonacci and Tanner McDougall are some prospects who are still to be announced that will be joining those mentioned names at White Sox Fest. So, Sox Fest is returning again to the Rimowa Theater, which is presented, as I said, by Rate, Blue Moon, and Wintrust. Celebrate the start of the season with music, entertainment, and insider conversations with members of the 2026 Clubhouse, Saturday, Jan 31. For more information and to secure your tickets, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestLive. That's SoxFest Live. All right, so as I close out this week's edition, I did want to mention it is going to be a busy week in Major League Baseball as the winter meetings do begin this week. It is December 7th through the 10th for the MLB winter meetings. Some key dates, of course, on Tuesday, December 9th, the Major League Baseball draft lottery will be held. The White Sox hold the highest percent chance of coming away with the top pick. And in baseball, remember, higher the pick matters because of the salary slaughtering. You earn more money when you have a higher pick, or you have more money to play with for your draft pool. So we will be rooting for the White Sox to finish highly in the Major League Baseball draft lottery. Hopefully they can come away with the win this year. That would certainly be ideal. Again, that's on Tuesday. And then the Major League Baseball winter meetings wrap up with the Rule 5 draft. And normally, I'll tell you, as a baseball fan for a long time, the Rule 5 draft was never something that I was particularly interested in. But after the success the White Sox had this past year in drafting Shane Smith, their all-star representative, with the number one overall pick in the Rule 5 draft, and then also trading for Mike Vassell on the eve of the start of the Major League season last year, which meant that he was still, the White Sox had to keep him on the roster. He was under the Rule 5 draft rules to keep him on the team. So the success the White Sox had with both Shane Smith and Mike Vassell last season has made me a little bit more interested than I've ever been in the Rule 5 draft. I'll play for you here Chris Getz, Mike Vassell. Like, we know what Shane Smith did. I've talked about that ad nauseum, but just to remind you of how successful Mike Vassell was, that's something we hit on with Jack Ankeny. Mike Vassell was stupendous. And to the point where at the end of the year, I asked Chris Getz specifically, he's been so good in the bulk role, out of the bullpen, would you consider giving Mike Vassell an opportunity to start next year?
We like him in the bullpen. We do. You know, not to say that he can't be a starter at some point, but to be able to pitch leverage and also offer, you know, multi-inning opportunities. And he's not scared, that's for sure. He loves those moments. He even talks about pitching in those moments. He wants more of those. So, you know, for a guy that wasn't protected in his own organization to get Rule 5 and then get claimed by us and be able to provide what he has this year is excellent. So, you know, we're going to continue to grow him in that bullpen role. He seems to really enjoy it. You know, he's got a long career in front of him, so I don't want to close the door on starting down, you know, in the future. But for us next year, I see him in the bullpen.
So there you go, Chris Getz talking about the success that Mike Vassell had last season. It was so good at the bullpen that they actually don't even want to consider moving him to the rotation. I just think it goes to show and reemphasize how much better a spot the White Sox organization is in than it was just a year ago. That is going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly. Quick reminder, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. Want to say thank you to my guest, Jack Ankeny from Sports Illustrated, who covers the White Sox, also the IU alum who's excited about his Hoosiers tonight. And as always, thank you to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball. That is Brendan Riley. Brendan, great job. Hope you had a fabulous Thanksgiving as well. That's going to do it for us this week, folks. I am Jeff Meller, back again next week with White Sox Weekly, right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000.